We've got to stick together to survive. There isn't any escape from this place for the likes of us. Not with a whole skin, anyhow. You're here now, and you've got to make the best of it. If you want to keep on living, you have to learn the rules and follow them, just like the rest of us.
Bells were ringing in Christie's head, and not just from all the smacks.
If we don't follow the rules, we get culled.
Valerie Louise smiled.
Just like you cull everyone else who doesn't fit in. Even your own children.
Of course. It's the only way to keep order. There's no point in feeding someone who won't obey the rules.
I get the feeling Jubilee isn't just going to get a few slaps and be sent on her way.
You're right about that. She's already had her chances. Now she's got to pay. Even the unfit serve a greater purpose in Little Pueblo. Praise Bob, praise Enid.
And what purpose is that?
They help keep the world in balance.
How so?
Bob and Enid taught us that everything has a price, and that the price must be paid by someone. If you want to know the truth, it was Enid, not Bob, who set it all down. She knew things that even the white coats didn't understand. She knew about the people who used to live here in olden times.
You mean the Anasazi?
We don't have a name for them. They lived like we do, a very long time ago, right here in this place. Enid learned their secrets. Every place in the world is like a machine, that's what Enid said. The parts have to fit together for the machine to run, and when they break, they have to be replaced, either with same parts or parts that do the same thing, more or less. Those are the rules of the world.
And what's that have to do with the unfit?
You have to make peace with everything you can see and everything you can't see. You have to feed the demons.
What sort of demons?
Hungry ones. Older than time.
That's strange. I heard a similar story about this place many years ago.
That's because it's true.
How many babies have you had?
I haven't had any.
Well, I'd say you got 3 or 4 left in you. And the redhead has 9 or 10.
Baby machines. For the likes of Pilgrim Plavik.
You don't have to submit to this. You can fight the pilgrims.
Maybe we could, but we can't fight all the men. There are too many of them. And any man can become a pilgrim with the right luck. That's the way it works in Little Pueblo. One breaks down and another takes his place. Things have been like this since the day after Armageddon. Bob and Enid made it so. We can't change it. And we don't want to change it.
Why change what works?
Exactly.
That was a joke.
Christie nodded as if she agreed, and the punishment came to an end without blows from Valerie Louise. It had all been about getting them on board with the program, scaring them, hurting them, whatever it took. Satisfied with the progress they'd made, the wives exited the room, leaving the new converts to Bob and Enidism tied to their chairs.
What about Doc and Jack? Do you think they got themselves killed, Christie?
There's no way of knowing. We can't count on their help, though, and it sounds like Ryan and JB are going to be in big trouble come dawn.
To hear those wives tell it, when people get put down into that dam, they don't come out again.
What was all that about feeding the demons?
I don't know. I got the same story from a tour guide in the early 1990s. Indestructible monsters appeared spontaneously during times of drought to prey on the people living in the canyon. He said it was a myth from the Anasazi days. It seems to have survived Armageddon. Can you get loose?
Only if I use my Gaia power, but I don't want to do that. We may need it again later, and it takes me too long to recover. We've got to find another way to get free.
Ryan and JV were led down the shaky staircase. In front of them were field hands with torches. Behind them were 4 more armed men, and bringing up the rear, the pilgrims in charge, Dennison and Artis. Dennison was the bigger of the two, a wide young man with huge hands and feet. Artis was tall, lean, and hard, with wavy blonde hair and a wiry mass of black chin whiskers. The deeper they descended, the stronger the mold smell got. Water stains marked the walls. Outside the limits of the torches, it was very dark, and the quarters in the stairwell were tight. Tight enough so if Ryan could have freed his hands, he could have made a fight of it. Even with the terrible odds, he could have grabbed a blaster from one of the lackeys and done some real damage, maybe even gotten them out of this fix. But he couldn't free his hands. And with just his feet for weapons and the steep down angle of the steps, that was a lost cause. He could see that JB was thinking the same thing and coming to the same conclusion. The stairs ended in a long, narrow hallway lined with walls, floors, and ceiling of rough-hewn stone. It was hard to breathe for all the dust they were kicking up. They were probably 25 feet underground, and there was no ventilation. The field hands shoved them onward. Halfway down the corridor, Ryan saw the floor-to-ceiling bars waiting for them at the end. The heavy steel for the early 20th century jails had survived the deluge. Pilgrim Dennison ushered Ryan, JB, and Jubilee inside one of the cages.
99. very funny, motherfucker.
The holding cells on either side were empty. Ryan surveyed the stone block walls and floor. The cell's lone bed was a metal rack that hung suspended from the wall by two lengths of chain. It had no mattress. In the corner was a dented lavatory bucket.
How about cutting our hands free, pilgrims? We aren't going anywhere.
Not after what you did.
Yeah, no way. You stay tied.
They left an armed man to watch over them, even though they were bound and securely locked away. He pulled a white plastic lawn chair out of the adjoining cell and took seat in the hall under the torch. After a few minutes, figuring things were well under control, he let his hairy chin fall to his chest and fell fast asleep. Ryan and JB walked along the back wall and took in the graffiti scratched into the stone. It was not promising. Hell awaits, kiss your ass goodbye, and other words to that effect. Ryan looked over at Jubilee, who sat on the edge of the bench, staring at her hands, which were shaking uncontrollably.
What's going to happen to us, Jubilee?
She didn't answer.
You know what's going to happen. Tell us.
She looked up at him, her face devoid of hope.
There'll be a ceremony tomorrow morning. We'll be taken to the crest of the dam and offered.
I don't like the sound of that.
Offered to what?
The demons.
What are you talking about?
They live in the dam. As long as we give them offerings, they stay inside. Those are the rules that Bob and Enid set down in the beginning. If we don't obey them, everything will fall apart.
What do these demons look like?
Jubilee gave JB a blank stare.
Ever see one?
No. No one has.
Then how do you know they even exist?
They're screams sometimes. From the people who get put down into the dam. Terrible screams. And blaster fire inside. Not for long, though.
How will everything fall apart?
The demons will come out into the canyon if we don't make offerings to them. They don't like it outside. They hate open space. But if they're hungry enough, they will come. And when they do, they will eat everybody.
If that had ever happened, you'd all be dead.
It hasn't happened because folks never let it. Since the days of Bob and Enid, the people have been making offerings.
Why can't you just chill these rad-blasted things? You got plenty of able hands and blasters and ammo to go around.
You don't understand. They aren't flesh and blood like us. They're spirits. They're like smoke. Bullets don't hit them. Blades don't cut them.
JB gave Ryan a dubious look. They had both encountered wagloads of superstitious crap in their travels across the hellscape. Left on their own, the people of Deathlands worked out all sorts of rubbish to believe in and organized complicated rituals to celebrate it. Separating the real dangers from the imagined ones could be a full-time job.
Where did these things come from?
I don't know. No one knows. Where does the air come from? Or the sun? For as long as anyone can remember, they've always been here. Only now, there are more of them.
Maybe because you fucking morons fed them and let them breed.
Easy, JB. It wasn't her doing.
People here just followed the rules that Bob and Enid set down. And they've always worked to keep things safe. Bob and Enid showed us the way. They were the first to understand. They offered themselves to save the Vill.
The girl wasn't helping Ryan separate the real from the bullshit. He changed the subject.
I know why JB and me are locked up, but what did you do?
I made some mistakes before you came.
Must have been some pretty big ones.
Sometimes a person can't help doing certain things, even when that person knows something bad's gonna happen afterwards. I don't like being told what to do. I talk back. I argue. Because of that, Pilgrim Wicklaw wanted to get rid of me, to pass me off to some other pilgrims. Only none of them would have me because of the way I am. Wives are supposed to keep quiet when a pilgrim gives an order. Wicklaw tried to trick you into trading for me because you didn't know that I'm worthless as a wife. When people are judged worthless in Little Pueblo, they get culled real quick. When they're offered to the demons in the dam, they're put to some use. People who think and act different don't live very long here, and the demons are always hungry for more.
What will happen to Mildred and Christy?
Some pilgrim will take them for his wives. If they don't do a good job of wifing, they'll be called too.
JB leaned close to Ryan.
Jack and Doc got away. Didn't see their bodies on the grass.
If they're alive, they'll find a way to help us.
Let's hope they do it before we get sent down into that rat-blasted dam. What the blazes is that?
At the stair end of the hall, a couple of field hands appeared, half dragging a wounded man between them. Three more wounded from the battle in the square hobbled into view behind him, bracketed by armed guards. The man in front had a broken right leg. He was making most of the racket. It looked like he'd taken a 308 round just below the knee. The slug had shattered the bone so badly that the lower part of his leg swung around like a dead weight. From knee to shoe top, the leg was drenched in blood. The guards put him on the bench in an adjoining cell. Two other men had received wounds to legs and arms, both from gunshot and Gren shrapnel wounds that were bound with strips of rag. The third man was blinded, probably by a Gren blast, his eyes covered with a dirty bandage.
What's all this about, Jubilee? Why are they locking up the wounded?
They're the ones hurt too bad to recover. They're going to be offered tomorrow, too.
A look at the men's faces told him what she said was true.
Well, looky who's here.
JB gave Ryan a nudge. Limping down the hallway at blaster point with his hands raised was Pilgrim Wicklaw. An ounce short of trigger break, with a man in his sights, Jack held his fire. He watched as the attackers climbed the redoubt's rear wall and swarmed over the roof. Doc was right. Picking off a few of them wouldn't help their friends break out. The entrance was surrounded. Ryan, JB, and Jubilee had no place to run.
Hold your fire! We've got them!
They're still alive. Thank goodness for that. We need to withdraw and formulate a rescue plan.
Chaba coming.
Five men with blasters had just stepped from the trees onto the sidewalk, about 30 yards down.
And look, there they are!
We go.
Before the Vilfolk could get off a shot, he and Doc broke and ran, cutting across the corner of the park, putting the trees between them and pursuit. Neither of them considered making a stand in the square. There were too many enemies, too close at hand. For an old man, Doc could still hump it pretty good, Jack thought. And that was a good thing, because the five men were running hard to catch up. There wasn't any more yelling from behind. They were saving their breath. Jack led Doc across the street to the opposite sidewalk. He turned toward City Hall and sprinted for the one-story doorway he'd already used. Even though the sidewalk was a long straightaway and their backs were unprotected, it was dark and he figured the men chasing them wouldn't stop and lay down bracketing fire. They didn't have clear shots, and if they stopped, they risked losing their quarry altogether. He took Doc through the building and out the back door. As they cleared the rear exit, they could hear the Bill folks storming in the front. This time, when he rushed into the alley, he went right, heading away from the park. Before the hunters could close ground, they reached the mouth of the alley and got around the corner. Spread out before them was a moonscape of ruination, bathed in starlight. Below the crown of the town center, there were no intact buildings, just empty lots and debris from the houses that had once stood there. A hurricane or tornado would have produced much the same effect, stripping away the above-ground structures, leaving behind the concrete foundations and concrete pads, as well as a clutter of bent pipes, old water heaters, furnaces, pieces of rebar, and lengths of insulated wire. Falling down wasn't an option if they wanted to stay alive, so Jack kept to what was left of the paved streets. As he ran, he listened for the footfalls of the pursuit. He was leading them away from the square, and they were following, just as he'd hoped. He and Doc had to isolate the hunters, get them as far away from backup as possible, and then quietly take them out. They had to do that before they could help Ryan and the others. On either side of the eroded asphalt road, a gridwork wasteland sloped down toward the dam. The city ground wasn't worth cleaning up to grow food on. Not when there were fertile fields already established, closer to the shores of the lake. As they neared the city limits, Jack caught a change in the sound of running footsteps behind them. He stopped, pulling Doc down into the cover of a concrete block crawl space open to the sky.
They split up. Two that way. Try to trap us.
Shall we trap them instead?
No blasters. Use blades.
I concur.